Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Thursday, March 28th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion about a very old movie, 10 Things I Hate About You, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary a few days from now. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hi.
All right, BJ, I thought it would be a good opportunity to go back and look at this movie, 25 years old, this coming Sunday. We have a lot of other stuff planned for the rest of the week. I think we're going to be doing a spoiler discussion about Godzilla X Kong, the new empire at some point, hopefully tomorrow. But I didn't really want to let this anniversary pass without at least talking a little bit about 10 Things I Hate About You. And since you are somebody who hosts a teen girl podcast or a podcast about teen girl movies specifically, I just thought it would be fun for us to talk about this movie. So I guess before we get into what we think about it now, what did you think about this movie the first time you saw it? Do you remember?
Oh, I absolutely remember. So this is a 1999 movie. 1999 is the year of teen movies. There are so many teen movies that come out in this year. And 10 Things I Hate About You was a sleepover staple for me growing up. This is a movie that we would rent from Blockbuster and watch at every birthday party. And you just sit there and sigh at the TV and quote it and laugh. And it like lives in my bones. I know this movie like the back of my hand. This was an extremely formative movie for me growing up because I, not to like hashtag not like most girls myself, which is, you know, a horrible thing that anyone who grew up in the 2000s had to deal with, but specifically Kat Stratford, played by Julia Stiles, was the first female protagonist I had ever seen that was like this alternative girl who listened to ska music and read Sylvia Plath and was this kind of person, which is very much who I was growing up. And so I became hyper fixated on Kat growing up. Mm-hmm. The fact that her character is coded as a lesbian certainly did a lot of legwork for me as a like budding baby gay. So this is a movie that it like lives with me. When I move through the world, this is part of my DNA.
Excellent. I remember seeing this. I think I was probably 14 or 15 when I saw this movie, which feels like a pretty good age to see this. And you know, it's just, it was one of those movies. It was like a big deal for all me and all of my friends in junior high going into high school. It just feels like one of those movies that like everybody was talking about. And I kind of think it holds up better than I thought it was going to. I guess before we get into that, I will say, speaking of the Julia Stiles of it all, I think I've only seen this movie. I saw it in theaters. Maybe I saw it one other time. And then I just rewatched it last night to prepare for this conversation. So this movie does not live in my bones in the same way that it does for you. But I do remember thinking that the Julia Stiles character, when I was, whatever, 14, 15, was, I remember agreeing with the movie's perspective on her, like thinking that she was this sort of like, I don't know, like antisocial outsider. And like, you know, this person who is like, constantly spouting her theories and whatever. And I have to say, like, the biggest turnaround for me watching it now is like, I'm 100% on Kat's side, like the entire time watching this movie. She gets kicked out of class multiple times. And I'm like, she did nothing wrong. What is wrong with you? The teachers booting her out of class, or like people, you know, sort of rolling their eyes at her talking about, you know, patriarchal systems or whatever. And I'm like, yes, exactly. Preach. Like, this is true. This is, you know, I feel like culture has come around to agree with everything that Kat is basically saying in this movie. What do you think about the way that, I guess, Kat was perceived then versus how she might be perceived now?
So, and this will get into a little bit about my feelings of it going, you know, to now. Now that I'm an adult looking back, so this is an adaptation of William Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew, which was like a very popular thing that we did in the 80s and 90s, where a lot of these teen movies are just retooled Shakespearean tales to make them easily digestible. So Cat is the Shrew. And as a teenager, or as like a young kid, because I saw this when I was like 9. Like, I love this movie as a kid. But as an adult looking at it, I have such like immediate defensiveness at the fact that Kat is being presented as the Shrew. And the only things that make her a shrew in the eyes of this movie are things that we believe make lesbians shrews. Like, it really bothers me on like a very visceral level that the entire movie is basically like, oh, this feminist buzzkill who listens to the Raincoats, what a bore. And I'm like, yeah. I hate this because it unfortunately like does perpetuate stuff that we still deal with today, where I can't write anything /film about anything progressive without somebody immediately calling me like a groomer or a feminazi. And it's like, I swear to God, please go outside, breathe a single molecule of fresh oxygen. I am begging you. So that has definitely painted the way that I feel about this movie quite a bit. But I am glad that a lot of people who, you know, did not grow up with this movie, who have been watching it later in life or revisiting it, have realized like, wow, this movie really tried to paint her as this villain. And like, her biggest crime is that she's a white feminist. Like, she definitely does need to inject a little bit of intersectionality into her stuff. So when Mr. Morgan calls her out on her like white girl nonsense, yeah, he's 100% right. Like, she she needs some intersectionality in there. But overall, like, for the 90s, like, she is such a unique character. And I'm glad that people are realizing that, you know, there was some benefit to her and that she was justified.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I remember being like very into Larissa Olenek's character Bianca, her younger sister, in this movie when I first saw it. I think partially because I grew up watching The Secret World of Alex Mack, which Larissa Olenek starred in, and it was great, and I was like obsessed with her when I was a little kid. But yeah, watching it now, I'm like, the Bianca character is clearly like,
she's so insufferable. Like, yes, she's exactly. But she's such a good little sister character. Like, there are a couple moments, like, I love the "you suck" scene. My sister and I used to do that all the time. Like, "you suck."
Yeah.
"You suck." Like, constantly. Like, she's a great little sister character. This is very much your prototype of your Daria and Quinn Morgendorfer, but in live action. Like, that's what you're getting with them.
Yeah, and they do have, like you said, a couple of like, good actual, like, heart-to-heart moments that I thought actually played pretty well, given the sort of, I don't know, I guess, like, the general tone of this movie does not necessarily lend itself to, you know, it feels like a pretty heightened kind of thing, a pretty almost, like, sitcom-y premise in a way. But I feel like there actually are a couple like nice sister moments that they have sort of late in the movie. And it's not like the defining characteristics of them, but it sort of like sneaks through the rest of the movie.
And to me, this was very much like, this is the same dynamic that I have with my own little sister, who is a couple years younger. She is definitely like the quote unquote preppier one. She's definitely more conventionally attractive. She's a little bit more high maintenance and a little bit more shallow. She would not be offended by me saying any of these things. And she's also 30. She's fine if I'm judging her as a teenager. But this was our dynamic, is that I was older. I was like the weirdo liberal arts sister who was into all the weird stuff. And she was way more conventional, to the point where people like couldn't believe that we were related. So this was also a reason why this movie resonated with me. I was like, this movie gets me and my sister. They get it.
Nice. Okay. So I guess like I went back and I was listening to the very beginning of an episode of This Ends at Prom, your podcast that you did with your wife about this episode. And then I stopped listening to it a couple minutes in because I was like, I don't want to spoil myself for what BJ's thoughts are when I have our conversation about it. And I'm going to link to that podcast episode in the show notes for this episode so people can go and listen to you two talk about this probably in a deeper, maybe, well, certainly a longer form than what we're going to do today. But why don't you just sort of summarize, because I think that episode came out in 2020, if I remember correctly.
Yes, so it is that was one of the first episodes we did.
Okay, so that was 4 years ago, 5 years ago, something like that. And I think the movie was like celebrating its 20th anniversary or something, like right around the time maybe it had just celebrated its 20th anniversary. But I don't know, I guess like, what is your relationship like with this movie now? And what was that conversation like between you and your wife? Because I think she came to this movie much later in life.
Yes. So 10 Things I Hate About You is how our podcast was started, This Ends at Prom. So originally we it was supposed to be a column in a magazine, which I will not say which magazine it was. And then COVID hit and they were like, jokes on all of us. We don't have a freelance budget anymore. So this really great idea that you had, you can have back. Because for those that don't know, my wife, Harmony, is transgender and she came out when she was in high school. So a lot of the formative like teen girl movies that are like, you know, these movies that live in my bones, she either did not watch growing up because she was so socialized as a boy, or she kind of got thrust into survival mode adulthood as, you know, a transgender 18-year-old and didn't have time to go back and watch any of these movies. So the idea was that I was going to be showing her these very formative teen movies, and she has no nostalgia for any of them. Mm-hmm. So she is a blank slate. She is completely unbiased, and she can help assess whether or not these movies are any good, or if I'm just, you know, rose-colored nostalgia glasses. And I was very excited to show her 10 Things I Hate About You, and she hated this movie. She was like, I don't like the fact that this movie is so lesbophobic. I don't like that this movie also suffers from the she's all that crime of, all of this could be prevented if you all just communicated. And just like the fact that Patrick Verona does not just like show up at Kat's door and go, listen, this loser is giving me a bunch of money to take you on a date so that he can date your sister. How about you and I split this money and we just go do something? Like, whole every problem in this movie is solved immediately by just communicating that. But, you know, that's not a fun love story. So, like, I get it. So that was what made me want to do, you know, this podcast was like, oh, my God, like, have I been wrong this whole time? Because when I watch the movie, I love this movie. But when I take a second and actually start breaking apart this movie, I don't like this movie and I don't like what it has to say or what it like what the messaging is for the same things that you're talking about with like when you watch it when you're younger, you're like, oh my God, Kat is this like horrible person and Bianca's the one to like. And then as you become an adult, you're like, wait a minute, no, Bianca's annoying and very insufferable and very self-centered and Kat is right. But the, you know, the movie struggles to pick its lane sometimes. I also really hate Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character in this movie a lot. And his like, I'm just going to pay my way into dating this girl. Like, I cannot stand that. That is not romantic. That's so manipulative and shitty.
Yeah.
But then there's so many other things about this movie that I love. I think all of the adult characters in this movie are fantastic. Larry Miller as the dad is my favorite teen movie dad. He's so funny. Allison Janney as the super horny school counselor writing smut in the office.
Yep.
Incredible character choice. Mr. Morgan calling out all of his students on all of their BS at any given moment. Love it so much. So it was a very hard conversation to have with her where I'm like, but you don't understand. It's so good. And she's like, BJ, this movie hates people like you. It's telling the audience that people like you are shrews. And I'm like, I know.
Yeah, it's so complicated because that's actually just what the culture was. I mean, you know, in speaking from my perspective, my very small window of life experiences, that's what the culture was telling me at that time. You know, in 1999, that felt, all of that stuff felt very normal. Or a very mainstream, like this movie was not doing anything outside of the norm in terms of depicting these characters, these archetypes in this fashion. That was just kind of like how stories were told and how characters operated and reacted to characters who had personality traits like that. So, you know, in a way I hesitate to like judge the movie now from a modern lens, because that's just like, that's what things were much more like that 25 years ago than they are now.
Yeah. And that's the struggle that, you know, we have with all teen movies, because teen movies are time capsule films and they are the most brutally honest time capsule films of any subgenre, because they're trying to capture the cool and the hip and the culture of what is right now. They don't think about being timeless. They don't think about how things are going to age because they don't matter. Teen movies live and die off of like what they make right as they come out. Mm-hmm. And so this is such a good reflection of how we were viewing these like quote unquote riot girls that were in high school. Like, so the movie is accurate and it is authentic in how it's presenting everything. But it is one of those things where, you know, now as an adult, I look back at this, you know, what we normalized, what we said was okay as a society, and how I still deal with the effects of that as, you know, a lesbian in 2024 as an adult. Like the seeds that were planted in, you know, history, like the flowers are blossoming and there's plenty of good that have come out of it, but there's also a lot of bad that has come out of it. And so it's this thing I have to juggle with. I love this movie that so clearly, you know, wants to make me the protagonist, but also wants to judge me. Mm-hmm. And also this movie, you know, allows her to fulfill happiness and like find that happiness by sacrificing a little bit of who she is and what makes her so special. And like, there's just like a couple of things where it's just like, I struggle with it, but I can't also go back in time and make this movie not mean something to me.
Yeah.
And I also think that it is incredibly well written. It's written by Karen McCullough and Kirsten Smith, or Kiwi Smith. They also work together on Legally Blonde and Ella Enchanted. So these are also Karen McCullough also worked on The House Bunny and She's the Man. And they both did that too as well. Either way. So this is like the Mount Rushmore of like teen girl cinema is this writing pairing. Like they're great. And this is one of their big hits. And I don't think that they wrote this with like, you know, we're going to really stick it to the lesbians here. I don't think that was their intention at all, because they want the audience ultimately to be on Kat's side in the end, because she's gonna get Heath Ledger. You can't dislike her and also want us to root for her getting to end up with Heath Ledger.
Yeah, that's true. And I think Kat's probably gonna be fine. Like, you know, the idea of her kind of giving up some of her personality in order to be with him. Like, she got into Sarah Lawrence, you know, she's about to go off to college. This is gonna be just a fling, like right after this movie.
So much more insufferable and radical. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. You know, everything that you're saying rings very, very true to me. At the same time, I can't deny that this movie just like has a lot of charm to it. You know, it's just like it's still fun to watch now. And I think a lot of that has to do with the performances. So let's take a break and then we'll come back and talk about that. And then also we'll see if we can figure out where this falls in the teen Shakespeare movie pantheon. So we'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, so the big charm factor, I think, for this movie for me is Heath Ledger. Like, just watching him, you know, it's been a while since I've seen anything that he was in. I kind of forgot, you know, how magnetic he is as a performer. That smile is just like, you could power a stadium with that. You know, it's just unbelievable to watch. And it just made me really sad in a way to watch this movie, knowing that, you know, we only had the limited amount of time with him and he only gave us a certain number of performances. Cause I watch this and think about what he could be doing now. And it just kind of breaks my heart, but man, he's so good in this movie. What do you think about
his performance? He's unbelievable. His only crime in this movie is I think he has terrible hair, but I think that about most men's hair in the 90s, I think they all look terrible. No one knew what to do with curls then. Everything just looks crunchy and greasy and not great. but I his idea of charm is so funny to me. Like the way that he says like, hello there, girly, like lives in my brain. Of course you can't talk about his character and not talk about the serenade scene, which was then, you know, parodied in Not Another Teen Movie. It's so iconic. Like that's really a word that gets overused, but Heath Ledger running up what is very clearly like cement stairs. Like if he biffs it, he's getting seriously hurt. And just singing, you know, I love you, baby, into the microphone.
And like evading the cops and stuff.
Yes. Too. It's so charming and wonderful. He loses points for interrupting what is very clearly like the lesbian concert just to like intrude himself. It's like, come on, read the room, my guy. Don't be here. But he, you know, he does try and he is so charming. And I totally get why every person my age fell in love with him. Like, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. The communication thing that you were talking about, where he definitely should have just like gone up to her and been upfront about what's going on, also extends to the moment where they have had a really great night together and she goes in for a kiss in his car and he just says like, maybe we can do this another time. And she takes that entirely the wrong way and like gets mad at him. And the whole reason that he sings that song is to sort of make up for the fact that she feels humiliated by that moment. And I don't know if I really picked up on this when I was 14 or something, but I watching it now, it's obvious that he didn't kiss her because he was just driving her home after she got completely wasted at a party and didn't want her to be drunk and making out with him and like think that there was some sort of situation where somebody was being taken advantage of. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's clearly going to watching it now. I was like, well, that's clearly going to come back later on and they're going to have a conversation about that. And then they just never address it. So, mm-hmm. you know, he does this big romantic gesture to kind of, you know, even the score, even the playing field between the two of them. But they never really talk about it. He never says like, hey, the reason that I didn't kiss you, it's not that I'm not interested. It's that you were completely drunk because right. of this party that we were at. So I just thought that was a weird, maybe like a missed opportunity or something. And I don't know if that was them hewing a little close to like the Shakespeare text and like trying not to veer too far from the main beats of that story or whatever. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, I just thought that was like interesting to note. The other thing that you mentioned is kind of hating Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character. And I remember deeply relating to that character the first time that I watched it, you know, I was just like, and this speaks to, again, what was going on in the culture of the time. Another show or a show that I loved at that time was Boy Meets World. Right. And mm-hmm. Corey Matthews, I remember thinking like, yeah, that's my guy right there. Corey Matthews. Like I grew up watching Boy Meets World. I've seen every episode of the show. I was just like, yeah, this is my sort of like, if I had like an ideal sitcom high school experience, I would want it to be that. And my wife and I just happened to be flipping channels the other day and we were watching an old episode of Boy Meets World and we're like, oh my God, Corey Matthews is like completely a total like selfish dick who has like no, he does not understand how to talk to his girlfriend Topanga at all. Like does not understand anything about reading the room or women or like truth or like having, you know, a good relationship. Like this character is like completely off the deep end. And I was reminded a lot of that when I watched the movie last night and saw Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character. And I was just like, man, they kind of like this whole portrayal of like the clean cut good boy in the late 90s, early 2000s was pretty toxic looking back on it. Uh-huh. So yeah, that was a real tough moment for me remembering back to me being like, oh yeah, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, that was my guy, that character. And then being like, oh God, I hope I wasn't too close to that in real life. But
I think really what it is it's like characters like Cameron and characters like Corey Matthews. And then to some extent, I love David Krumholtz in this movie, even though like his character is Michael's like kind of despicable, but I like love David Krumholtz too much to care.
Yeah. He's so good in this.
Like they are all these kind of extensions from like the Revenge of the Nerds, the Farmer Teds from John Hughes movies, you know, the Anthony Michael Hall characters, like they are the descendants of this, like the geek shall inherit the earth underdog story. Yep. But then you look back at like Revenge of the Nerds and all of these like geeks winning movies and you're like, oh no, this is way worse. Like this is horrible. Oh, yeah. At least the jocks are upfront with how awful they are. This is like a new form of manipulation. So like I get why so many people probably felt seen by Cameron because he is kind of this like, aw shucks, I just have a crush on a girl and it's not yeah. gonna work out. But then like when you really break apart what he's doing, it's like, oh Cameron, you're like a sociopath. Like what are you doing, guy?
Yeah, it's pretty rough. Yeah, I think I related more to like like you said, that sort of like wide-eyed, I think Krumholtz's character refers to like his love for Bianca as being pure or something. And that was yeah. kind of like what I related to is just like having crushes on girls from afar and not really knowing what to do about it or whatever. But yeah, when you actually look at what he's doing and sort of like all of this manipulation and like sort of going around all the typical ways of just like, instead of just walking up and having a conversation. I mean, this whole thing, this domino effect, beginning by money changing hands and like trying to work with this evil villain played by Andrew Keegan to sort of get what he wants.
Joey,
and like,
eat me, Donner.
Yeah. And the feeling of like deserving something, right? Like the scene where mm-hmm. he's in the car with Bianca and he's just like really mad at her and she kisses him. At the end, I was like, no, Bianca, don't let him off the hook like this, because he's showing his true colors right now. This sort of like wounded, like, I did XYZ, therefore that means I get the girl kind of behavior, was really embedded, I think, in that period of time, in that cultural era. And thankfully that's not nearly as embedded as it is, or as embedded today as it was then.
See, because this is what happens when everybody makes Ducky in Pretty in Pink feel like their underdog hero. And it's like, no, he was also a problem. but, you know, because we do have the Joey Donner character, you do get that dichotomy of like, well, I'm certainly not that guy. So I'm more closer to Cameron. But then you look at it and it's like, no, you're all bad.
Yeah. So, yeah, a little bit of a tough experience for me rewatching this movie. But yeah, still, I mean, Krumholtz is like so funny in this.
The deadpan look on his face when he's like, there's a dick on my face, huh? And it's just like, yeah, man, there is.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot to mention when we were talking about Heath Ledger, I read that Josh Hartnett and Ashton Kutcher were also up for that part. I kind of feel like Hartnett might have been able to pull it off at that time. Ashton Kutcher, I just feel like, is almost too modern for 1999. Like, he strikes me as like such a 2003 guy. And I have no idea if that makes any sense to or our listeners.
It makes total sense to me. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, can I articulate why? No, but you're 100% right.
Yeah. So, you know, thinking about him in this part and looking back on this, I just feel like everyone else seems to be on this, would have been on the same page, and he would have like stuck out a little bit more. Hartnett, I feel like maybe could have blended in a little bit.
And Hartnett gets his own teen Shakespeare. He's an O.
Yes. Which is we're going to talk about that.
So.
And then Eliza Dushku and Katie Holmes, I read, were up for the Julia Stiles role.
I think Eliza Dushku could have pulled it off because this is not super far removed from Missy and Bring It On in terms of like the edgy alt like attitude. Mm-hmm. But there's something so natural about Julia Stiles's face.
Yes.
That where it's just like you look at her the wrong way and she looks like she's gonna cut you.
Yeah.
Whereas with like Eliza Dushku, there is something still like very sweet and down home about her that when she looks tough, it's because it's intentional.
Yeah.
Whereas like Julia Stiles, like that is embedded in her.
Yeah, that's exactly right. For Dushku, it feels a little bit more like she's putting on airs, or like it's a bit of a performance or something for her. But for Stiles, it just feels like completely organic to who she is as a person that shines through it as that character. I totally agree. And Katie Holmes, I just feel like, I mean, the Dawson's Creek thing would have been really tough to overcome in that era. I mean, she was such the sort of like clean cut good girl that I don't know if...
Well, we've also seen what happens when we try to make her edgy. We get Disturbing Behavior, which is a movie that I love, but I know is not good.
Man, I don't know if I may have seen that one time when it came out, but I have zero memory of it.
I am not a person that's like a hashtag release the director's cut person. I am for Disturbing Behavior because so much of that movie got changed in the edit, and I've heard about what it originally is, and I want that movie so bad. If you've not watched it, I do recommend it. It's a horror movie where they're brainwashing all of like the alt kids in school to turn them into like preppies so that they're all conforming, and it's one of James Marsden's early roles. It has a great needle drop of Flagpole Sitta, but you get edgy Katie Holmes with way too much eyeliner saying that that's razor.
Oh, God. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for laying the groundwork there. At least my expectations are set properly when I do eventually watch that. So, I guess as we sort of try to wrap things up here a little bit, where do you think this falls in the teen Shakespeare movie pantheon? I mean, we're talking about the fact that it's a riff on The Taming of the Shrew, and like, there are famous examples of movies that are riffs on Shakespeare, like The Lion King is Hamlet, and Kurosawa's Throne of Blood is basically Macbeth. And I think I read that My Own Private Idaho is apparently based on Henry IV. I've never
it's based on most of the Henrys, like that whole series of plays. Yeah.
Yeah. I am not familiar with the Henrys, to be honest. And then I've never seen My Private Idaho. So I was just like trying to look up examples of this kind of thing. But I think that the main movies that I'm thinking of from this period are like Romeo plus Juliet, the Baz Luhrmann movie. Which you mentioned is the riff on Othello. She's the Man, which I think came out a few years later. It might have been like 2005, 2006.
Yeah, that's 2006. And yeah, that's Twelfth Night.
And then like West Side Story is kind of, I feel like you can't really have this conversation without including that. And I kind of also feel like that's the obvious number one. So everything else is just kind of fighting for number two, but I don't know if you feel
so
differently.
So here's my thinking on it is that, so like, yeah, West Side Story is like kind of the untouchable version of Romeo and Juliet as far as an adaptation is concerned. And I would also say that like Romeo plus Juliet is like kind of unfair, like because it just is Romeo and Juliet, just with, you know, Baz Luhrmann's visual nightmare of awesome.
Yeah, with guns so in that. Santa Monica or something instead.
Right. So the one that I think is underrated that people don't talk about enough is Get Over It, which is a Kirsten Dunst movie, and it is A Midsummer Night's Dream. It's chaos. There's a reason that it's kind of forgotten, but I think that it's really adventurous and it deserves more credit. But
I've never seen that one.
Most people haven't. So don't feel bad. It's from 2001. Also, Mila Kunis is in it. It's chaos, but I really love it.
Okay.
10 Things I Hate About You, I do think is one of the best for sure. But the ultimate one, and this one is going to probably get me a little bit of flack, and I understand why, it's fine. The best one for me is 1985's Just One of the Guys, which is also a 12th Night.
Okay.
Just One of the Guys is so good, and it is like, it's about a young woman named Terry who wants to be a journalist for like her school paper, and they're not taking any of her publications seriously, and she thinks like, oh well, you're not taking me seriously because I'm a woman. So she cuts all her hair off, and because she already has a gender neutral name, she just goes to a different school to enter the same competition to be like a writer, but as a boy named Terry. And it is so fun because she kind of looks like Ralph Macchio, and they keep noting it. Like, other characters are like, ooh, that new boy in school, he looks like Ralph Macchio. And then the bully of the school is played by Billy Zabka. It is so funny.
Oh, wow.
But it is, like, it's a movie that obviously it's from the 80s, so like some of the gender stuff has aged a little weird. It has, you know, the of course the time-honored cross-dresser trope of, you know, when they don't believe that she's a girl, she's got to flash everybody so that, you know, you notice it. And there's the great comeback line of the guy she has a crush on that goes, where do you get off having tits? It's so funny. But it is so formative in terms of this genre, in terms of this adaptation, in terms of having like a, you know, one of these like cross-dresser teen comedies in a way that feels very honest and very kind. And it's so clearly not played for laughs. Like, the joke is not, ha ha ha, let's look at this person in drag. The joke is like, our world is so terrible, and like, let's look at how people genuinely do treat you differently depending on what gender identity you have. I love Just One of the Guys.
So you think
so
that's
much.
The number one for you?
I think it is. Yeah. I think that's my favorite of them. And then like, it's not Shakespeare, but if we're going to just say like classic literature, then the obvious winner is Clueless, which is an adaptation of Emma, which people forget all the time.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
Specifically for Shakespeare, for me, it's Just One of the Guys.
Okay. Yeah. I was looking up the movie as you were talking about it, and I remember seeing parts of this on TV when I was a kid and thinking that it was a John Hughes movie, maybe just because it came out in that same era, and like filing it away of like, oh yeah, I got to check out Just One of the Guys to like watch all of the John Hughes movies one day. And I've not gotten around to doing that. So I didn't, like, as of right now is when I'm learning that it's not in fact a John Hughes movie. Lisa Gottlieb directed it.
This played on like HBO a lot back in the day, but there's just so many things about it that I think it overlooked. Like, Sherilyn Fenn is also in that movie, and she's great in it. The little brother character in this is like the horniest little brother character you've ever seen in a movie, but it's presented in a way that like the movie is not, you're not on his side for what a gross pervert he is. And it's one of the few examples of a movie that doesn't want you to be on the side of the gross pervert. And I think it's because it is directed by a woman, and there were not a lot of teen movies directed by women. And all of the ones that are great. Like, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, directed by a woman, is great. Mm-hmm. So to have like, it's so hard to explain, but like, once you watch it, you'll be like, I can see the difference in how we're approaching teen stories and gender and all of that. Like, it's just all, it's different. And yeah, I love it. I love it so much.
You mentioned flashing in Just One of the Guys, and I forgot to mention the scene in 10 Things I Hate About You when Julia Stiles flashes the
teacher.
Yeah, the detention. I was just like, oh my God, I cannot believe that I forgot this happened.
It was the 90s.
Yeah, totally. Wow. And like, he just doesn't react to it. And I'm like, that was a wise choice at least, because that could have been bad.
What are you going
to
do in that situation?
Oh man. Yeah, that was quite a moment remembering that that happened. So yeah, okay. I mean, how would you come down, like, if you had to recommend 10 Things I Hate About You to somebody, or if you had the opportunity to, would you, or would you say, you know, maybe there are other movies from this era that you should watch instead, or like other Shakespeare adaptations that you should watch first, or like, I don't know, what is your sort of like top line takeaway from this movie in 2024?
So I've definitely, since recording the episode of This Ends at Prom, I've softened on it a lot, because when we first recorded that episode, it was the first time I ever had to reckon with maybe I don't like this movie the way that I thought that I did. So my pendulum swung a little hard in that direction. But in the last 4 years, I've softened a lot more and have like very much made peace with what this movie is, what it was trying to say, versus my big issue with a lot of movies is that I'm not mad at the movie. I'm mad at what was culturally taken away from the movie. Mm. It's like why I have beef with things like Fight Club, where it's like, no, this is objectively a great movie, but the fans, yeah. I can't deal with you people. And that's kind of how I think I felt about 10 Things I Hate About You for a very long time, where I really like the movie, but I hated how uncritically people were looking at it because they also love this movie, where, you know, I want people to hold multiple truths at the same time when watching this movie. Like, this movie is, you know, a seminal classic. It is beloved. It is funny. It has such great performances. And it's also a little problematic in its depiction of lesbians. Like, let's just be real here. And also, you know, acceptable toxic masculinity. Mm-hmm. Those can exist at the same time. They don't cancel each other out. It's not an either or. This is not a zero sum game. It's all of it at once. Yeah. And I think if people can watch the movie, if they've never seen it before and know that going into it, then they're going to have a great time, because this movie is fantastic. And everybody just needs to see Larry Miller as a single dad of two girls. It is so unbelievably funny. My God.
Well, 10 Things I Hate About You is currently streaming on Disney Plus and Hulu right now. So if you've not seen it, thanks for listening to this spoiler-filled conversation, which is quite the choice on your part. If you've not seen the movie yet, and hopefully you got something out of this conversation. But yeah, for anybody who wants to rewatch it or check it out for the first time, check it out there. Thanks for joining me, BJ. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I got one last thing to say. There's a lot of Letters to Cleo music in this with Kay Hanley, and she also did all the music for Josie and the Pussycats. So if you like 10 Things I Hate About You and you're like, wow, this movie has really great music in it, you should go watch Josie and the Pussycats, because it also has that great music.
Okay, excellent. Well, yeah, you can find much more about the stuff that we mentioned on the show at slashfilm.com. I will link to a couple things in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features that you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Please send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Don't forget to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Also, if you could, take a second to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big money.